This is the Partnership Playbook, a podcast helping sales and marketing leaders secure high-value partnerships that finally unlock business growth and reclaim time. I'm your coach, Phil Hayes-Sinclair. Welcome to the show.
All right, folks, I'm very excited to welcome to the show today Scott Kelly, who's the founder and the CEO of the Black Dog Venture Partners, a business accelerator that provides access to funding through a network of 13,000 investors, business development through a network of 40,000 business partners, and sales and marketing and executive coaching services for disruptive companies in the United States. Scott, thanks for making the time to join me today.
Thanks for having me, Phil. I appreciate it.
Let's dive right in. I'm very interested to understand what Black Dog is all about. And for those listening in Australia, Black Dog has a different meaning because we talk about as an institute here that focuses on mental health around Black Dog. This is different to what we're talking about here today. What led you to Black Dog Venture Partners and why is it important to you?
Well, the reason that led me to Black Dog is I've been a deal guy for 30 plus years. I started working on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange in the early 80s. Moved to San Francisco, worked as an investment banker, taking technology companies public. And then, you know, in the 90s, during the dot-com boom, I became an entrepreneur and launched my first of three companies that I exited between 93 and 2000 in California. And after I thought I was going to retire, I tell people I unsuccessfully retired twice. My first unsuccessful retirement is when I moved to Arizona. After about 6 months of retirement, I started another business in sports and entertainment and sold that business about six years afterwards. And then that kind of led me to Black Dog. And, you know, what was happening, Phil, is that a lot of the larger, later stage venture capital firms were coming to me for companies that were too early for them. And so we work with early stage technology founders in the U.S. and around the world, quite frankly, Phil, not just in the States, technology founders, consumer product companies, and we help them fund their business, scale their business, go to market, and then eventually help them exit. And, you know, we've been pretty successful. We've, you know, facilitated about $5 billion of equity raises for these companies. 30 of those companies have exited since we started. And like you said, we built up a large network of investors and partners.
And why is it that you find the deal making so interesting? And I ask that out of curiosity, because from my point of view, I love deal making. I think I love more the idea of seeing value come from a deal as opposed to the transaction itself. So tell me a bit about where that came from.
Yeah, I'm a deal junkie. You know, the reality is my whole thing was that our motto has been to solve problems and create opportunities. And those are always done by doing a deal with somebody,
right?
Whether it's a financial deal on investment side, or sales and marketing or distribution deal, you know, I'm always looking for an opportunity to add value and honestly take this large network of people I've accumulated over the last 30 plus years and put them to work helping somebody else.
I love that. Where did the name Black Dog come from?
You know, I get a lot of I let that question a lot. It's not a Led Zeppelin reference. It's not it's not a place in up in New Hampshire. What happened was when I started the firm in 2000, my younger son had just been born and I was going to name it after him. And quite frankly, there was a trademark issue and my attorney and I were just spitballing names and I had just taken my black dog, Mike, Black Lab, to the vet. And so, you know, we came up with Black Dog Venture Partners. And so this point forward, I have not had a non-black dog and we are on dog number five. Right now,
yeah, so. I get that. I totally get that. I love it. Scott, let's talk a little bit about what you look for in opportunities, because you've seen so many of them. And when it comes to the entrepreneur, the market, the product fit, early, late, all the dimensions, and every investor has their own lens through which they look at opportunities. What do you look for given your experience?
Well, we're early stage. So when you're with a company that hasn't had their product market fit or hasn't gone to market yet, you got to look at the entrepreneur, the founders of the company. Yeah. And you know, these are founders, you know, this is a hard business. You know, you're going to have to take rejection, hear a lot of no's, how to overcome failure. So, you know, when I first look at companies, I got to look at the founders and their grit and their ability and their tenacity, their ability to keep going in the face of adversity. And that's primarily number one, especially in early stage companies.
Is that the same in some of the media collaborations that you've done before? Like, is there a heuristic you're using here which is very similar in all cases, or is it really different depending on the kind of deal being done?
It's somewhat different, but, you know, when you're looking at, you know, other collaborations, you have to do your homework. You have to know they are, you know, have a giving mentality, because, you know, deals and partnerships don't work until someone moves first and someone moves, you know, without expectation. And I look at that all the time. You know, I will be announcing two partnerships this week that were a genesis of relationships I had with previous partners.
Oh, very interesting. Okay. So on this show, we talk a lot about partnerships, obviously. And one of the things that we really try to dive in on is, what is it that makes a really successful partnership? And what is it that somebody should walk away from if they see red flags, if they haven't done too many partnerships before? Because so many people keep on hearing, as a distribution point of view, that you should do a partnership with so-and-so. And many people look back at probably you and look back at me and sort of go, I have no idea where to start doing that. I've got a contract, but I've got no idea what to do before or after that. So can we just dive into what you just said there around how is it that people get started with partnership? Because I feel like for you, it's probably very instinctive.
It is instinctive, absolutely. It has to feel right, you know, before you enter a partnership. You have to have a good relationship with the person or people you're having a partnership. You have to, you know, be on the same page, you know, from a, you know, philosophy standpoint, from an integrity standpoint. And, you know, and I think that's the primary thing. And honestly, when you're first starting out, honestly, you and I probably, and folks listening, get hundreds of opportunities to partner with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's, I always say, you know, trust but verify.
Yeah.
Find out who they know, find out who they partnered with in the past, and see how those relationships went. Because that'll tell you the things you should avoid or the things you should capitalize on.
Yeah, I love that. And the interesting thing as well is, many people look at partnerships and they feel, for people not in the know, that they've appeared out of nowhere. But often there has been a pre-existing relationship, right?
Yeah, they don't fall from it. You have to do the work. You have to be out there, you know, talking about what you need, what you can offer. You know, the reality is, on a daily basis, I interact with somebody on LinkedIn or social media, and I always look for the opportunity. And so you have to have your antenna, you know, open, and you have to be willing to listen to other people's partnership opportunities, because you don't know what they can bring to the table until you have a conversation with them. So I think you have to be proactive.
Right. And when you get into a conversation, what are you very actively listening for that would tell you, I just don't know if this is going to work? And this is before you've done any due diligence. Like, there, is there a set of, because I'm very happy to share with you mine, but I'm very curious around what are you listening for that would allow you to go to a second meeting?
I'm listening for phrases like, how can I help you, as opposed to how can you help me?
Right. Right.
You know, I have a philosophy when I create a partnership, I act first. I do the first intro. I make the first connection for somebody, and then I wait. But if the initial conversation is all about how I can put, you know, an opportunity in their pocket, and that's all I hear, that's a red flag for me.
Yeah, same. And it's interesting. I have this mental model that I don't know where it came from, and I could have taken it from someone else. But it feels as though whenever somebody introduces you into an organization in a partnership context, that it is really up to you to pay back that playing card they've put on the table of political capital to bring you in, right? And there should be nothing that stops you from doing that if you want to make sure more partnerships can come your way. But the quickest way to burn any kind of political capital is to not pay that favor back.
Absolutely. You know, for me, it's, I'm always proactively figuring out a way. You know, I've been fortunate that I built a large network of people, and I can, you know, the many years ago, I'm dating myself, you know, the actor Kevin Bacon had what was called the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, where you can affiliate him with any other actor in Hollywood with six iterations. And I run my business much the same way. If I don't know someone who can solve a problem, I ask them who they know that can solve that problem. And that's been, you know, how we are successful for ourselves and for the partners I work with.
And I think that for the most part, people are very interested and very keen to help. All
they
you
are.
Need to do is to give them an ask, right?
Exactly. And it comes down to setting expectations in the beginning. I think when you establish these partnerships, you have to say, okay, this is how I can help be helpful. And how can you be helpful? And how can we use our mutual relationships and connections and experience to create a win-win situation?
This is not one of the questions we were going to talk about, but you've just mentioned something which I feel when it comes to newer business developers, those who are maybe entrepreneurs the first time, maybe the second time, they're not really generally taught this act of reciprocity. They haven't seen enough deals go through. They haven't been party to enough conversations to work out how do I act here? What is it that I do in order to make this work? And I've seen many founders, you know, even get to their sort of late 20s, early 30s, even into their 40s, where it's like, that's how it works.
Right.
So if you're, what would be your advice to an entrepreneur or sales and marketing leader listening right now to sort of change that mindset?
Be more interested in the relationship first and let the transaction develop from that. You know, I think sometimes with early founders, they are so concerned, and in some cases, rightfully so, of generating revenue and closing that sale.
Sure.
They don't realize that the long-term relationship with somebody can merit far more in terms of sales, revenue, and growth than just simply trying to get the transaction through as soon as possible.
So true. So true. So everybody, deal with the relationship. Get after that relationship as much as you can, add as much value as you can, and good things inevitably will follow. Maybe not immediately, but they will follow. So, Scott, let's dive into some of these partnerships that you've done, obviously the ones which are non-confidential. And can you pick those apart for me and tell a bit of a story around how they came to be and why they were so wonderful?
Yeah, you know, I have a great partnership with a fellow investor. His name is Brian McMahon. He runs a venture capital firm in Santa Monica, California, here in the States called Expert Dojo. And I've known him for 20 plus years. And the reality is we just started out by meeting at an event and we hit it off. We're both Irishmen, you know, so we found some commonality from that standpoint. But, you know, over the course of these years, he's invested in our companies. We've hosted events at each other's locations. You know, I have my podcast. He's been a guest on my podcast. I've been a guest on his, and you know, it's been something that it's never hard asking because we know that we've constantly reciprocated it. And you know, and that's just, you know, one of many. You know, the reality is I own a stake in a podcasting platform called Podatize, and you know, we helped them early in their business, and now we're partnering to produce my podcast. So it was something that I didn't have the technical skills and quite frankly, didn't want to be a podcaster until I realized the value in it. And this relationship again, over 15 years has, you know, has flourished into a, you know, a thriving additional business that we're running.
When you look back on that relationship, were there one or two defining moments that made you think, yeah, this could work? I mean, it's always great to get to conferences. It's always great to have those kind of relationships spark it, particularly post COVID when we were sort of starved of that human interaction. Now we have this chance to be back in real life. And it's I think most people would agree, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
What were there a couple of moments where you just thought to yourself, you know what, this guy and what he's doing, it's just going to find a higher level of priority in my thinking because of what he's done.
Yeah, absolutely. The case of, you know, Brian, we went out and had a pint and had complete conversation that had nothing to do with business. He talked about his version of football versus my version of football. And, you know, we talked about our kids and, you know, we built a friendship first. As I mentioned before, we had a relationship before we began working as partners and doing, you know, individual transactions. So, you know, those are always the things that I find is that, I've over the course of my career, I've decided I don't want to work with people I don't like. And I think that's very important. And I think sometimes some of these early entrepreneurs will bite the bullet and they might bring in investor dollars from an investor that should not be part of the company. Yeah. You know, they may bring in partners because they're so desperate to have that distribution that they're going to create some negative, impact on the company going forward. And, for me, I got to like the people I work with. You know, life's too short to, work for, I won't use a pejorative, but you know what I mean.
I do know. Life is way too short for many mediocre things. And I'm completely with you. You mentioned here something which I think is almost a ticket to play when it comes to building commercial partnerships or any kind of partnership for that matter. And I think it's to do with earning the right to know someone well enough to engage well. And this has been completely annihilated, I think, via social media. It's this notion of what do we need to know to have a relational conversation with a future business partner so that we're on the same page. And the things you mentioned before, knowing their kids, understanding more about their football, I think there's probably a handful of facts that I consider to be the right to know someone in order to go anywhere near talking about business. And for me, the top five is, do they have kids? Who are they? What do they do? When is their birthday? If there's ever a factor to know, which LinkedIn will tell you when you look inside their profile, know their birthday. For the love of God, reach out on their birthday and say happy birthday. Making sure that you know something about their history which has a point of contact with your history somewhere. And it can be disconnected like sport, or it can be something a lot more connected. And I think just the idea of understanding what they really love in their work. And I just think this takes conversation, right? I don't think you can have exchanges via chat or anything else. It's just, you've got to get to know them. And I think that's where entrepreneurs come a little bit unstuck. And so do many senior leaders, where they're urgent to collapse that time to relationship, where sometimes there is just time that's required to build the relationship.
And absolutely. And that probably applies more for startups trying to raise capital and trying to meet investors.
Right.
I can tell you probably during this phone call, this podcast interview, I probably have 6 unsolicited pitch decks in my LinkedIn DM.
Yeah.
And I'm going to delete all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is when entrepreneurs say, well, I need to raise money for my startup, I go, start 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Get to know these people. You know, unfortunately, social media has made it easy to reach out to people. That's the good news. The bad news is it's made it easy to reach out to people. Yeah. And sometimes, throwing a pitch deck or your solicitation into, your LinkedIn DM, people aren't just, oh, gee, I was just thinking I wanted to invest in you, or I wanted to buy your product. And thank you for putting me on the auto email that sends me an update on the setting up a meeting every 6 days. So it is, you got to start with the relationship first.
Yeah, I think that's right. So Scott, what's been some of the hardest lessons you've learned in running such a diverse set of organizations or being involved in as investor and advisor in all of these companies? Because we learn a lot, right, in building businesses. Yeah. I've done 8 so far. You've done quite a number. What are some of the ones that stand in the front of your mind in terms of things to be mindful of?
Well, the hardest lessons came from some of the recommendations I just mentioned is, one of the hardest lessons is do your homework. Do your diligence on the people. I've unfortunately had a few cases where I took the recommendation of somebody else and I didn't do my own homework. Mm. And I think that can always lead to problems. Secondly, manage expectations from the beginning. That's a lesson I had to learn hard, because sometimes when you have a conversation, you know, you may think the conversation meant one thing and the other party might think that conversation meant something totally different. So it's really important to make sure, and I've learned the hard way, that if someone expects something that I didn't think I told them, but maybe I implied it, that can become a problem. And so I honestly, almost every, you know, technology is great. You can record, you know, Zoom calls and video calls. But, you know, what I do is after every conversation, I send an email summarizing, you know, without AI, you know, what the conversation had. So the hard lessons I've learned are, you know, are centered on not doing my homework with the person I'm going into a partnership with, you know, and two, just making sure expectations are completely upfront and undeniable in the beginning.
Isn't it fascinating? I mean, when we think about the reasons that partnerships fail, it's where the intention was not clear, because there's been so much head nodding in the room and people have gone, oh, yes, I think we're all on the same page, when we are a country mile away from the absolute clarity required to know exactly why we're here. I built a tool which I didn't realize I was using, but for every partnership I'd built in my biotech or healthcare years, it was a 5-page deck that basically said, on page one, here's who we are and why it makes sense for us both to come together. Slide two were the values that we would bring to any kind of collaboration. Page three was what we plan to do together. And page four was, what are the next steps to make this work? And it wasn't glamorous, but it was enough to be an internal sales document for the other side to make that work. And then when people would say, why is it that you would go to that all that effort, which wasn't actually a lot of effort, it was probably, you know, 2 or 3 hours worth of work and thinking, we ended up with a document that people understood, which then we could hand to lawyers when it got to a point of clarity, and then they could build contracts around what that intention was, and everyone was on the same page. And it's such a simple thing. I didn't realize that we were doing at the time. I now make sure that any partnership that I see has one of these documents in front of me so I know what's going on. They're simple tools, right, to help people get to that same place.
No, absolutely. And quite frankly, I'd like to get a copy of that document for myself. So
I'll send it right over.
Fantastic. No, I agree. I think it is important to have that framework, you know, because again, unwinding a bad deal takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of expense. So you might as well avoid those three things and get it right from the beginning.
Yeah, I'm with you. You mentioned, you know, unwinding. This is one of these things that I think people, for some reason, I'm not quite sure why, people hear the word partnership and they're romanced by it. There's almost an assumption that this is going to go forever and that we're going to end up with, you know, this relationship, which is almost sort of almost familial. And we forget that, look, we're dealing in two organizations driven by a need to survive in a capitalist economy, generally.
Right.
So at some point, this relationship, this partnership, not the relationship, the partnership will come to a natural conclusion. It might come to a very abrupt conclusion, but hopefully if everything's done well and the intention remains intact, then the relationship will persevere. When you've had to bring a partnership to an end, this is a two-part question, in a great circumstance, how has that played out? And when you've had to bring one to an end in a difficult circumstance, how does that play out?
Well, on the first side, it played out with an opportunity to leave the door open for the future.
Right.
And I think just because a particular partnership didn't work or concluded doesn't mean there's not another partnership opportunity with that person. Because honestly, I've had many cases where, you know, it happened a couple of weeks ago where a company, you know, they shut down their business. And so the partnership ended because of that. Right. And then several years later, he approached me with his new business and we established a new partnership because the relationship maintained. Yeah. Now, in the latter part of your question, you know, it's, you know, fortunately, you know, the United States is a very litigious society and, you know, you can file a lawsuit, you know, as easy as you can find a lawyer. And so obviously in the reverse, sometimes you have to go to that course. And, you know, most of the partnership agreements have some kind of mediation or arbitration relationships, right. But and that's what I obviously recommend. But when it goes south, you know, there are attorneys that are more than welcome to take a retainer to take one side or the other or both.
Mm, okay. I think that's a fair point. I find that when there's silence around a partnership, like there is often silence from an entrepreneur, things are usually not going well. And it feels as though that's the precursor to what's about to happen. And how that lands often becomes that's a very important starting point. And so whenever I start to hear less, I try to find a way in further to understand what's going to go on there.
I agree. And, you know, the reality is I go old school. If someone's not replying to an email, I pick up the call. I pick up the phone. You know, unfortunately, email is a good communicator, but it can also be a very bad communicator. You know, you can't communicate inflection, emotion, you know, other things in an email. And so when it starts to go south, I pick up the phone. Yeah. And if someone wants to scream at me or yell at me, I'll let them do it. And then I'll respond, you know, in a professional fashion to try to resolve the situation.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, written communication will suck the context out of anything. So if there's any way to just have a conversation, I think people feel a lot more brazened on email or a written form when compared to just talking human to human.
Yeah, Mike Tyson had a very good, you know, quote. You know, it's your social media is great and until you get in front of somebody, they can punch you in the mouth. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but you know, social media gives people a lot of courage that they wouldn't have in a face to face or phone conversation.
Totally correct. Scott, we're nearing towards the end of our conversation today, and I've really, really loved it. While people continue to listen to this and they'll be on their commute, they'll be working out, where can they go to learn more about you in the meantime?
Sure. Well, obviously they can find me at blackdogventurepartners.com. You can find me on all my social media handles at blackdogceo, and you can email me at blackdogvp.com.
Awesome. So let's continue with how your mindset around partnerships has shifted from the days that you were in the deal doing on the trading floor to right now. If you were to look back on your, you know, 20s and your 30s, how has your mind shift happened? Like, what sort of shifts have happened in your mind as you've
It's really aged? Interesting you say that because as I've gotten older, I've gotten more patient. Mm-hmm. I have gotten more conversational and relationship oriented versus transaction. You know, the reality is I started out as a stockbroker and a trader. So my job was to pick up the phone and close them until they said yes or they hung up. And, you know, that obviously doesn't really apply, you know, for a 60-year-old like myself in a society like we have today. And so that's probably been the biggest change is patience. If it doesn't happen today, there's a reason. And I will push to an extent to come to a conclusion, a yes or no. But sometimes the answer is not yet. Right. And you have to be patient for when that not yet turns to a yes or a no.
Mm. Yeah, I feel as though the same thing is happening to me as well. I think I was probably very, very urgent, very impatient without the need for sort of going, wait a second, this might not work well, but it also carried me through a number of things as well. So I think that there's a horse for the course, but I think if there's a way to communicate patience in a world which seems devoid of it most of the time, for sales and marketing leaders, like you said earlier, for entrepreneurs, if you're trying to raise capital, do a deal, start 6 months ago, at least.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm curious, Scott, you know, people will talk a lot about partnerships. They talk about it in many different contexts. You and I have both lived and benefited from having that as one of our primary toolkits for growth, in my case, as well for supply chain management during COVID. you know, my companies wouldn't have survived had we have not been very, very focused on the partnerships we have with suppliers. And frankly, we stopped calling them vendors. It's a dirty word in our world. You know, the need to deal with and respect the people that provide you with the inputs to your business. They should be treated the same, if not better, than the people that are selling things for you. So I'm just curious, you know, what do you think people are missing about the value of partnerships in the world right now?
I think what they're missing is that partnerships provide a real opportunity to fill the gaps that your organization might be missing. You know, I work with a lot of technical founders who understand technology, understand coding, but aren't very good at sales or accounting or other aspects. So one, I think it helps you fill the gaps. And two, it helps you scale. You know, a lot of early stage startups don't have the ability or the finances to hire a sales and marketing team. And so by partnering with, you know, others that do have access to those, you know, provides an opportunity for them to go from a one-to-one sales transaction to a one-to-many. And yes. I think those are the two things that a lot of folks and a lot of entrepreneurs miss.
I very much agree. We have a tradition on this show of having a rapid fire set of five questions at the end of it. Can I get you those questions downrange now?
Go for it.
Perfect. All right, let's do it. Question one for you, Scott Kelly. Finish this sentence. Partnership is?
The opportunity to scale and grow your business.
Question two, what content are you loving at the moment? And it can be anything from film, TV, podcasting. What are things that you're really into right now?
So some of the content I really like is, you know, personal to my space. You know, I have good relationships with a number of venture capitalists that are great content providers. You know, Andrew Roman is a venture capitalist that has great blog content, provides great insight into the industry. You know, someone I met very recently, Andrew Petcash of a venture capital firm called Profluence. He studies the space of sports and investing and really has a handle on that. And I think the reality is there's the beauty of social media. It provides an opportunity to easily find and source that content. You know, my partner in the podcast, you know, Tracy from Podatize, you know, she works with 2,000 podcasts, and I'm always scouring some interesting podcasts that she has in her network. So a lot of them are geared towards that. And honestly, you know, other great content, I take a lot of inspiration from music. You know, I've owned a record label. I've had a gold record as a producer. And I think I get a lot of inspiration from great content on the music side.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, question three, what's the worst piece of advice you've received and why?
You don't need any help. And the reality is we all need help. And yes. The reality is I find too many entrepreneurs think they can do it all. You know, and the best way to fail is to think you can do it all and you don't need help.
Immortal words for humanity. Let's get our act together, people. Let's get it together. Question four. When you see potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
Go first. Once we have a partnership established, I make the first intros. I make sure they get value first. I don't sit there and wait for them to bring in something. I'll bring in something first.
I love that. And final question, what is one thing you're deeply grateful for right now?
Well, I'm grateful for two great young men that I've managed to raise. My older son, Zach, has a successful video production career after graduating college. My younger son, Jacob, is in his final year of pre-med at college. I'm very grateful for that. And very recently, I'm very grateful that I got engaged last weekend in New Orleans to a beautiful lady that I love enormously.
That's extraordinary. What great news. What great news. Scott Kelly, it has been a real privilege to talk to you today. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Before you go, I have a quick question for you. Do you worry that you're wasting time, money, and credibility with the wrong partnerships? It's exhausting to pretend everything's fine while secretly worrying that you've made the wrong call. You see others thriving with the right connections, and you're stuck wondering if you're missing out on opportunities that could really elevate your business. Well, the good news is that ends today, because you can download my free partner calculator that instantly assesses if a partner is an ideal fit for your business. It'll give you the clarity and the confidence and the edge you've been looking for to secure high-value partnerships that not only finally unlock business growth, but also help you reclaim your time. The link is in the show notes. And I'm really glad you're here. I'm Coach Phil Hayes Sinclair. I'll see you in the next episode.